just be the start of a dynasty. This is history being written. The greatest moment I've seen in Premier League football.
Hey, welcome back to Across the Pond, a Premier League podcast hosted by those on this side of the pond. You've got Chris here in D.C., Shay down in Atlanta, Miles in New York, Jacob all the way across the world. Welcome back from international break, everyone. How's everyone doing? Did you enjoy your time off?
There's no time off when this is your calling. You know, I'd like to say when it's on air, that's my time for people to know how much work I put into this. No days off, Chris. I don't know about you, but no days off here. You're lost for words, I can tell.
Shay, you're right. We don't take days off here. We're always working to improve. I have to say, I watched a very exciting game, England versus Poland, which reminded me a little bit about the Man City-Leicester game in terms of dullness.
It's funny with international break, you know, it's like for the teams specifically, right? Like you, if you're playing well right before the break, you're like, damn, I wish we didn't have time off. We were finally riding high. But it's a really good time to reevaluate your form. And I think that's what I've been focused on over international break. I've been thinking about the prediction league and how I need to catch Shay. And, you know, at this point, I'm like, look, it's anyone's game now. I could totally revolutionize the way I'm picking games, and I have been. And I look forward to doing some more crazy mind games with you, Shay. I might be swapping picks late. I might be doing some funky things.
Chris, that would mean that you have to be close enough to me in prediction league to actually catch up.
Hey, you know what?
I don't think there's enough weeks for that.
Jacob, how are you doing
Chris
over there?
Chris has done some soul searching.
I'm doing well. I did not watch a lick of international football during the break because it's on at 3 a.m. for me, and I'm getting some sleep. That was my break, was to get some sleep, to not have to stay up to all hours of the night.
Since we last broke, we had a few news stories come out, some of significance that we would have for sure discussed, but I think the thing that is on my mind at the moment is the recent announcement that the Carabao Cup final on April 25th later this month is going to have up to 8,000 supporters in the stands for that Tottenham-Manchester City match as City heads on their quest to winning the treble. There'll be a question about that, Shay, specifically for you, but on their quest to win the treble this year, there's going to be 8,000 fans in the League Cup final, which I think is something we talked about a lot on this show, but something I think that, you know, hopefully is a safe, very fun and engaging match. I think we haven't seen fans in the stadium for so long after that quick experiment in the winter that now, you know, if this goes well, this could, you know, provide, you know, future fan visits in the summer for the Euros and then hopefully Premier League back to normal in the fall. You know, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves because we know how COVID has been trending for the last year and change, but pretty exciting news.
Yeah, you know, this will be a great, it's very timely this because Spurs fans all season have been very quiet in their homes. And this will be a chance for them to see Mourinho in action with all the ridiculousness that he's been doing this season. And they'll finally get a chance to voice their opinion. And maybe, just maybe, we won't see him next season.
I feel like this is the game that Mourinho, honestly, I don't know how, but I feel like he has a way of manipulating the situation to his benefit. And I feel like a cup final in front of fans, the first time all season we've seen a significant number of fans, because we have seen fans in other games, but first time all season see a significant number of fans, him against Pep Guardiola, the greatest Premier League, one of the greatest Premier League managers of all time, I feel like Mourinho is going to do everything in his power. You better believe that if he loses that game, all hell is going to break loose.
Well, Mourinho loves the attention on him. So wouldn't it be the most Mourinho thing in the world if he were to pull out a victory?
Oh, absolutely.
But is 8,000 people going to... I just, because we've gotten so used to, at least I have, watching the games without fans, I almost enjoy watching it on my TV without fans, like the ambient noise and the fake crowd noise. I've been off that train for a very long time. I love hearing every little detail on and off the pitch and what's being shouted. But I wonder how much actually 8,000 fans in a giant Wembley will materially come through across the screen to us sitting in our homes.
Yeah,
or
it won't.
Players.
I probably won't. It'll mean something to the players for sure. 8,000 is not insignificant, but to us, it won't really make a difference because that stadium is huge.
I'm kind of with you, Shay. Like, I thought 8,000 when I first read the headline was significant, but then you think about, I've been to Wembley and that stadium, I've been high up in Wembley, and 8,000 is going to look like ants dispersed across the stadium. Maybe they're all focused in one section. I don't know. But Jacob, to your point, I mean, does Mourinho want anything else but a shot at one game to win one piece of silverware for a club that hasn't won silverware in how long? If he wins this League Cup with Spurs against Manchester City, a team that people are deeming as probably better than even their own Centurion team, that's the most Mourinho result of all time. That would be incredible. Then he's a success at Tottenham. Who cares if it's an EFL Cup?
He brought them a trophy.
Yeah.
Yeah. He would love it too much. You would never stop hearing about it at his next managerial appointment, wherever it is that he made lowly Tottenham a silverware winning team. It would be intolerable, but it kind of would be the best story to have Jose Mourinho around. It would make him more entertaining and more insufferable all at the same time.
I just hope for Eric's sake, you know, this guy's bandwidth is, we know his bandwidth is stretched. He's on Twitter, you know, out there dealing with the trolls. And we know how he feels about Mourinho. So I'm just hoping for Eric's sake that, and his sanity, that, you know, he doesn't have to battle Mourinho too.
When you think about managerial feats, right, pound for pound, you think about, you know, what Roy Hodgson did at Fulham, for example. I think he had him finishing at seventh. When you think about, you know, what Ranieri did at Leicester or whatever, are people going to say Mourinho won Spurs a trophy? Like, is that going to be one of those, like, marquee, like, wow, he did it? Because Pochettino never did it. Put that in perspective for a second.
Well, I mean, if people don't, Mourinho will make sure that people do. So, yes, I think it would be, to use your word, pound for pound feat for Mourinho, for sure.
I mean, I know so many Spurs fans that want to lose the final just to get Mourinho out the door. This is where they're at now. It'll be a fascinating thing to watch, especially to see Spurs fans actually in Wembley, haven't seen Spurs playing forever, kind of wanting them to lose.
Well, if Shea has anything to say about it, it won't even matter because the League Cup's not a real trophy. Now. I mean, it's,
there it is.
You
it's
say,
just another
you say,
match,
you say
man.
One line. Match. You say one line in 7 years, you're still paying for it.
Yeah.
it's true. Listen, the podcast remembers. We have long institutional memory here, and no one is safe. You should, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no one is safe. That's true. Except for Chris, because he edits the tapes. But can we talk about Mourinho for a second? Can we talk about that he was asked by the reporter? So he was asked by a reporter, in the past, holding on to a lead is doing what you've been so good at, right? And his response was, same coach, different players.
Mm.
I think maybe he secretly wants to be out of Tottenham. He's plotting his exit.
I think us trying to decipher what Mourinho wants is a game we will always lose. He doesn't know what he wants, man. Each day he wakes up mad at something else. on the COVID train, right? We're talking about fans back in stadiums. Just one thing to know, over the weeks, I've been tracking COVID positive tests for the last 8 months, 10 months, 15 months, whatever. And you look at what the Premier League's done in terms of their positive results, and we're seeing on average 1 to 2 positive tests every week, 2 rounds of testing, even after the international break. Those are good signs, much better than when they were up to 42 positive tests in a week period. So you could say either most of the league has already gotten COVID already, or that maybe some players are actually getting vaccinated. I don't really know what's happening there, but it seems that things are under control. Maybe that's a general trend in the UK or maybe in the world. I don't want to start making public health claims on here, but you get what I'm getting at. I mean, it seems like things are trending up.
You know, I talked to my sister who does infectious diseases in London. We talked briefly about this. Not about Premier League, but just about the trend in UK. UK was so bad for so long. Like, they're actually one of the few countries that are worse than US, but they doubled down on this lockdown. Like, granted, the fact that players are still traveling and you barely ain't seen one wearing a mask anymore, but as a nation has doubled down on it. So the rates are getting lower and they've been able to deploy vaccines at a much better rate than the rest of Europe. The trend is going up in the right direction for the Premier League because the nation is doing well.
I think, you know, all of us want to be in a Premier League stadium in the next year. That's for sure. I'm sure a lot of people listening to this are like, I'd love to get out to watch my team play. It's part of the game we love, that fan experience. And I'm sure we're going to see fans, you know, get back involved in the game too, whether it's a ball being kicked out in the stands and them throwing it around, or your occasional, you know, streaker, or you name it. I don't know. What's your favorite a fan engagement that you've seen in the game, y'all? I mean, the Pepe Reina.
You know, I like the, well, what about, you know, Eric Dier jumping into the stands to beat somebody's ass? Or Evra, too, our favorite, you know, positive Evra, you know, also jumping in the stands to beat somebody's ass. I think that's always funny when the lines are blurred.
definitely has to be the Aston Villa fan. I'm pretty sure it was an Aston Villa fan at maybe at the championship final who had a dildo stuck to the top of his bald head. That is one of my favorite fan memories.
You also got to love, just as a fan, Mr. Portsmouth. I don't know if you guys have ever Googled this guy or seen him in the stands. If you're listening, you don't know who I'm talking about, just Google Mr. Portsmouth. This guy, if you saw him in the stands, you know, you probably not want to sit next to him.
Well, y'all, we look forward to seeing fans back in the stadiums. But y'all, we have to talk about this week in Premier League. We had some big results already. First weekend back after international break where, you know, some players who were playing abroad played up to 3 matches. The first game back upon return, Chelsea loses to West Brom and Big Scam himself saying, "Hey, guys, I've never been relegated. I'm trying to get a result against Chelsea." Frank Lampard's team. Oh, excuse me. Thomas Tuchel's team, Thomas Tuchel that has not lost a match with Chelsea. Big Scam comes in there and says, "Should have kept Frank." I mean, what, Jacob, what do you make of that result? Big Sam, we know what he brings to the table. And now, you know, only 8 points out of relegation.
Yeah, I think we have to stop calling him Big Scam. I think incredibly disrespectful, because if you actually look how West Brom have played since he's taken over, they hired him sooner. I think this is a good enough team to theoretically stay up. But because let's talk about some of these first-time events that happened this weekend. First time Chelsea has conceded 8 goals to a single opponent in a Premier League season. You know, West Brom over the course of the season for Chelsea. Sam is the first manager to win at Stamford Bridge with 3 different clubs. Chelsea hadn't conceded a goal at home in Tuchel's 7 games in charge, and they shipped 5 to West Brom. Like, let's just put that in perspective. And no, I don't believe that this is because of the international break. I think actually he's done a very good job with this team. The addition of Diagne up top, I think, has given them a real focal point for their attack. He played well this weekend. Callum Robinson looks refreshed after this international break, having a poor time with Republic of Ireland. Again, I thought they played excellent. And what was most surprising to me about Chelsea was the fact that they just could not keep the ball and chose not to after they went down to 10 men. And that's what did them in.
Doesn't help when Timo Werner's finishing the way he's finishing. I mean, we saw his moment over the international break, but he also had a moment, you know, across right into him where, you know, the ball went through his leg. But I mean, I think you raised some good points, Jacob. I mean, West Brom capitalizing on, I mean, against the Chelsea team, where if you look at actually the other opponents just above them in the relegation zone, Brighton, Burnley, Wolves, all teams that lost this week, you know, Newcastle drawing, they're knocking. I'm kind of with you, though. I think it's a little too late sort of situation for sure, because you would think that, you know, maybe Fulham can still sort of keep things together, but
they clearly have some great players in that team who are capable of scoring goals. And, you know, as Fulham have shown, you just kind of need to scrape by with some 1-0 results here and there. I mean, realistically, we have to ask the question, do we think what's happening with Newcastle was just a fluke this weekend, or is that sustainable? Because if we think it's not sustainable, I'm feeling pretty good that either Fulham or West Brom could leapfrog them.
I mean, one thing I think was clear about the West Brom game is those players look refreshed. I don't know what percentage of those players actually traveled for international duty. Somebody, you know, fact check me on that, but like, Chelsea, on the other hand, had a ton of players abroad playing. I know I watched Pulisic, I watched Havertz, I watched a lot of their other players play in Matt Werner with this terrible miss. But I watched a lot of these guys travel. I wonder if that played into Chelsea. I know you said it didn't impact West Brom, but, you know, if they're staying there training that entire time, Pulisic comes off with another hamstring injury. I always find this first weekend so fascinating, because it's like the first day of the season too. I don't think you really know what you're going to get from it.
No, it's so hard to predict. Like, there's some teams and players that are totally unaffected by it. You know, Jacob, to your point, looking at West Brom, I mean, let's be realistic here though. They're going to have to win at least 4 games. Mm-hmm. And their next opponents are Southampton, Leicester, Villa, Wolves, Arsenal, Liverpool, West Ham, and Leeds. That's to the end of the season. So out of that, that's 8 games. How many of those are winnable games?
It ain't happening.
I don't think they'll have to win that many, but it's a good question. Again, I just don't rule it out as being possible. And then to your point about this being the international break and it being so hard to predict, I think I got 7 right in the prediction league this week. So again, Chris, maybe not so hard. But I also really, in all seriousness, think that what we saw this week is just what we forgot about. We forgot about teams being able to prepare, being able to set up a game plan, not having to play 3 games a week. I think this is actually a return to normal. This is what normal looked like. You know, these types of results in before COVID, I think, were, again, the par for the course. Teams being able to prepare, coming with a game plan, and just getting a bigger than expected result. I think we've just gotten so accustomed to seeing teams be knackered all the time that when one team looks particularly fresh or well-prepared, then all of a sudden it looks like it's a different beast.
Well, we saw a lot of other teams lose by one goal, Miles. I know you had a whole list of teams that lost late with winners.
We got some squeaky bum time coming up. Shay knows this well from the dark years of Man United, the squeaky bum years. A lot of results that this weekend that had a late goal. I'm looking at the Newcastle-Tottenham game, Southampton-Burnley, not as much, but Man United-Brighton, Aston Villa-Fulham, Everton, Crystal Palace, all these games with some very late drama. And my question to all you is, which of these results, you know, Tottenham was winning, turned into a draw, Fulham was winning, turned into a loss, which of these results has the biggest significance?
I think Brighton's loss was really hard. To go up against Manchester United by Danny Welbeck putting them ahead in actually a brilliant cross and finish, Dean Henderson almost somehow stop that from going in. I think that just kind of proved how good he is, at least with quick reflexes. But the fact that Brighton lost that match, they're already sort of feeling the heat, you know, with relegation zone pretty close. And if you look back at their game against Manchester United in the first half of this season, the way they were robbed after the match by VAR and that stupid handball off Mopai after basically the whistle had blown, like, it's just a team that has sort of had Manchester United's number in recent years. That Brighton-Manchester United fixture is kind of weird. We've seen Brighton win some of those fixtures. We saw it close in the first time. And this one I thought was pretty close too, you know? So I'm saying Brighton has to be pretty heartbroken with that.
Yeah, you have to think that has to be demoralizing. 2 games where you think, you know, a point could have been significant in each, or maybe even a win, right? But the Newcastle one has to be the biggest because this is a team that's directly in the middle of relegation. And then on the other hand, Tottenham, a team that is directly in the midst of not qualifying for Champions League. Implications huge on both ends. So that's why, for me, this is the most significant moment. And to have a tie, yeah, you know, neither team really loses. But for Tottenham at this point, you can't, you know, being stuck in the middle of that battle between 3rd, 8th place, you can't afford to give up late goal drama against a team that's literally about to get relegated.
Yeah, I would bring it back to Fulham and their capitulation after being, you know, 1-0 up with 15 minutes or so to go being the most significant. Because had they won, they would have been out of the relegation zone. And Newcastle, despite its great efforts versus Tottenham and that, you know, tremendous result, would have been back in the relegation zone. So the fact that Fulham couldn't hold on, I thought was incredibly significant. Because again, their runway is getting awfully short in a weekend where West Brom also creeps up on them to perhaps surpass them as the team to maybe make it out and catch Newcastle. So it puts so much pressure on Fulham. They don't have a lot of winnable games left. Southampton, Burnley, Newcastle on the last day. It just feels like we're going to get a 2011-2012 season all over again, where really it's going to come down to the final day. And I can't wait.
Hopefully there can be some fans there. Imagine fans there. It'll feel like a championship playoff in that last day of the season.
I mean, that game, though, Jacob, to lose, to go down 3 goals, really, in the last 12 minutes of the game, that's pretty brutal. I don't know how you come back from that. When I saw Fulham was winning 1-0, was like, oh, shit, they're out of relegation. They're golden. Yeah, that's pretty demoralizing for the players, I imagine.
Well, let me ask you guys a question. You notice this all the time in games. As a manager, what can you possibly do when you just keep getting pinned in deeper and deeper and deeper to relieve the pressure? Because I was thinking about that in the case of Fulham. You know, what can Scott Parker do to change it? Do you take Mitro off and put a speed demon on top to give you a better out ball? Does Mitro give you the best chance of holding it up and getting up the field? Do you add another midfielder? You know, what are your options?
I mean, I think it's, you pull one out of one of the CONCACAF team books and you do what Honduras did against the U23 U.S. Men's National Team. And you find every tactic in the book to waste time. Like, I hate to promote this sort of like negative football approach, but I'll tell you, Mourinho would have keepers taking goal kicks for 30 seconds, having them clear the ball way up into those empty stands where you have to have a ball go up into the stands 35 rows to get that ball. I mean, some games you just have to win. Like, you just can't. I mean, you got to find ways to like dig deep and do it, because sometimes you just aren't good enough to hold the team off. Like, and clearly Fulham was, you know, blame it on either tactics or their attitudes, but you know, 3 in the final 12 is inexcusable.
I wonder, now that you've got me thinking about time wasting, Chris, is COVID making it harder for us to time waste? No fans, balls are all lined up on the sideline. You don't really have traditional ball boys. We need a Chris Bauerbank patented investigation here.
Yeah, I mean,
how Jamaica makes the World Cup in, you know, in the future.
They hire
Chris Bauerbank.
I mean,
either time wasting coach.
I wish Jamaica was good enough to actually get up 1-0 and actually effectively time waste. Unfortunately, we always end up going down 1-0. But what the Hondurans did really well, and one tactic I've seen deployed since COVID has hit and since the new short goal kicks rule has emerged, is you'll see a team set up as a short goal kick, and everybody will be in position deep on their side. They'll have two center backs on either side, and then the keeper will take a look at both of them both ways, Shea Davies style, really evaluate the situation, and then he'll say, you know what, I've changed my mind. Everybody push up, and that alone takes a full 30 seconds. So you could do I'm serious. You could do that 5, 6, 7, 8 times and a half, and that's, what, 3-4 minutes right there.
While I love the fact that we're now, you know, we get into the tactics of what managers should and shouldn't do and explain it in detail, I know that's right up Miles' alley. We're talking accumulation of 2 minutes max during that 6 or 8 times a game. It's not going to be 30 seconds per time.
No, Shay.
What is 2 minutes going to do for you in the grand scheme?
Ask the U.S. men's national team, U23 team, in the Olympic qualifier this international break, and I'm telling you, you take 3 minutes to do every single task, to throw a ball in, to get up from a free kick, to get up from an injury, in air quotes, that stuff adds up. It adds up.
There's no way you can really waste that much time doing that.
If you've never been on a losing side where a team has really been effectively trying, okay, I've seen. Okay.
Yeah, look. We all remember the game of the slip, the Liverpool Chelsea game, when Chelsea was doing everything to waste time, and it was the most frustrating thing to watch. And so I can only imagine as a player, you're just like, come on, like that breaks your concentration of like trying to win, you know, because now you're just frustrated about this other team wasting the time. Chris is right here. The psychological warfare as well as the time wasting.
You're right. It does move the needle. But if you're a team that has to depend on literally getting additional 3 seconds out of every single play, you might as well just admit defeat, because you're hanging on by a thin thread. Literally, you're trying to bungee jump off a thin thread. Like, that is not going to be...
Shay, you're talking about you're not willing to waste 12 minutes and a half of soccer when you're trying to escape relegation to ensure that your club makes another £70 million next year. I will be wasting every single second. If I'm Scott Parker, I'm going to accidentally step on the field like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't even see that. I would be doing the most ridiculous shit.
Growing up, Chris, we had these two twins on my club team, and they had the time-wasting routine down to a T. So one of them would like get the ball. You know, one was a striker, and his brother played right back. And when the ball would go out of bounds, you know, he'd have another player throw it back into him. And the right back would like let it go through his hands and run onto the field towards his brother, who was a striker. And then he would throw it back to him like 3-4 times a game and just, you know, waste loads of time.
I think we're talking about extreme circumstances with Fulham here. That's all. I mean, like, I'm not saying, do I want Liverpool wasting time? I mean, maybe if we're not making top four, but like, Fulham's got to find some way to stay up. Pride.
It's true. I was.
You can't have pride in this situation.
When Mitrovic scored, I was thinking of puns for Fulham this weekend, and they just denied me the opportunity to use the the magical Metro tour, Beatles lyrics. That's the best one I could come up with, but
managed to squeeze it in.
Yeah, we will not be licensing Beatles music for this interlude, but we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Champions League. There's Champions League going on this week and next week. Shay, you can sit this one out if you want. But there are plenty of games we'll talk about there. A quick preview. We've got to talk Big Oil. Big Oil update. Miles, you got that coming. We've got a quick Swagometer update. It's back this week. Listener questions, Prediction League, and more shortly.
We'll be there next season. We'll be there next season. The question will you.
Hey. Yo, I got to give a quick shout out before we start to Shay, man. This guy has changed my life. He's put me on the path of Shay, you know, you're a good friend, man. You put me on. I'm excited. Everybody's getting vaccinated. This is a good sign.
It's a good sign.
Yeah, I get vaccinated Thursday.
Damn, nice. Miles, okay. When you up?
But vaccinated.
Fully? Oh, when you look that good, anything's possible.
Larry, y'all, we are back. We got to talk Champions League. We got Champions League midweek and next week. Only 8 teams remain. That means only 4 matches. That means 2 matches a day. And we're starting with Liverpool Real. We got City Dortmund. We got Chelsea Porto from the Premier League side. And then the final match, PSG Bayern. Thank goodness those two are playing each other over there. That's fine. But it's a Premier League podcast, so Liverpool playing Real twice in 2 weeks after beating Arsenal this weekend. Miles, Jacob, what are your thoughts on what you saw this weekend as well as what to expect against Real?
I think we're probably all in agreement here. I think it was nice to see Liverpool back to basics, back to winning ways. Seeing Fabinho in the midfield is obviously a huge boost. And I think the other thing that we can't deny is the influence of Jota on this team, where we see the attacking lineup has gone a bit stale. Jota really came in, revitalized that whole line. And I think, you know, really the question I'm sure everyone's asking, and I want to know what you guys think, is this guy definitely starting against Madrid?
No, I don't think he will start Jota, and I don't think he should start Jota. Quite frankly, I think he is, as we've seen in the last couple of weeks, he's a great impact sub. And I think you still go with your front three, tried and true, tested Champions League experience, and you roll them out there. There are signs that they are starting to come to life. I think there's a little bit of worry about, you know, if I had to drop one, I'd probably drop Mane, just given his confidence. You know, you can tell when he was on that breakaway this weekend, he tried to square the ball across the six to Salah. That's something he probably normally shoots. You know, you bring Jota in as the battering ram.
You know, one thing we saw from Liverpool too after Jota came on was Klopp said, hey, you know what? I'm leaving the front three and Jota in there. So it looked like he had sort of switched the formation up a bit, just overloaded offensively. I like that approach, Jacob. Fabinho in midfield certainly helped.
Yeah, I think we should give Klopp some credit for changing it tactically, for taking off Robertson, taking off a defender, putting on another attacker. I know Eric has been over this tough season quick. I think others here on this podcast as well to criticize Klopp for not being tactically flexible enough, but he got it exactly right and showed the bravery to take a different approach. And then even on top of that, you know, leaving Milner in there and his versatility to be able to deploy him back to left back once they had scored to sort of revert back in formation is, again, very flexible, very adaptable. And excellent point, Chris. You know, maybe you don't need to play with the front three, play with the front four, 4-2-4, as they did.
So I have to ask the question, I mean, does Liverpool get through Real Madrid? And we'll talk about both City and Chelsea, too, in their matchups.
Yeah, I do. They're going to be without Ramos. They've had a tough season. They're just kind of coasting by on their reputation. That squad, I don't think, is that good anymore. They're old in the midfield. Their, like, investments haven't really worked out. Zidane, though, is good in Champions League, so it'll be tough, but I think we'll get past.
The question is how that midfield can work. You know, can they press Real Madrid high enough? Can they deny them the space like they did against Arsenal? you know, Fabinho being the key here, staying healthy. I just have questions about whether or not the inexperienced backline pairing can stop Benzema. I mean, he's still a force to be reckoned with. He's got 18 goals this season so far, 6 assists. He's a big time player, and there's a lot of experience in that team. So that would be what troubles me, Miles.
It also doesn't take much for Real Madrid to score with him in there. I mean, some of the goals I've seen him score in Champions League this year, I mean, it's been a perfect ball, a TAA level ball from this weekend to Benzema's head in the corner. I mean, they're just extremely efficient when they're on. With all due respect to Ozan Kabak and Nat Phillips playing well for them, respectively, we're talking about Real Madrid here, and I'm with you, Jacob. I think it's a pretty scary matchup, I think. Definitely not one I'm super confident about. One we can definitely win, but...
Keep in mind, though, right after Champions League, they have an all-important game against Barcelona, which could determine, you know, who's winning that title. So
yeah,
maybe we'll see a switch in the lineup. They got two very important games. So
we also have Erling Haaland against Manchester City, again in their quest for the treble, and Chelsea playing Porto without Captain America Christian Pulisic. Shay, what do you make of those two? What do you make of those two matchups? Do you think City and Chelsea can both advance? Do you think, you know, this is more a City's realm?
I think for the first time in a long time, I feel pretty good about Pep Guardiola's chances in the Champions League. Yeah, I think City can do well. I think City can do well. I think that's the more favorable matchup for the Premier League teams.
Well, when will Pep it up? You know, when is he going to make that tactical change that makes no sense whatsoever? When is he going to start Kyle Walker at center forward and instead of Jesus or whatever crazy derivation he might have in his lineup? Is it this round against Dortmund, or is it going to be in the semis? I mean, I don't know. It seems to happen every year.
Well, I'll tell you one tactical Pep lineup that he had this weekend. He had Ferran Torres coming out, lubing up his arms before he came out on the field. I don't know if we're going to see that now for all Man City players, you know, a little bit water bottle action on their arms. Maybe he's got something cooking up for all his players to keep them, you know, greasy and oily on the field.
Yeah, it's big oil taking over at Man City. We've seen it in use. Wolves with the Adama Traore oiling up his arms. I do wonder, y'all, are we going to see players starting to oil their bodies up as an advantage on the field? Are we going to start seeing it? You know, I compare it to like NFL receivers with sticky gloves. You know, there's been talk, are we going to have to get involved with the gloves, make them less sticky? Are we going to have to say no to players oiling their bodies to be less slippery? Like, where do we draw the line here?
Yeah, I mean, where's the line for some of these players? You know, where's the line between putting on some, like, lotion, keep your skin looking good when you go out on the field, to, you know, you trying to get an extra advantage from players trying to grab you? You know, this is a very tricky line here, I think. I think, but hey, Chris.
Don't you want to get grabbed, though? Isn't that the whole point? Like, then you get fouled. Why would I not want to be? If a player grabs me and they can't grab me and I can run away from them, then they don't.
They have to grab shirt instead, which could cause rips. I'm sure it's way easier to see.
I guess the cat's out of the bag.
Look, it works well for Big Dama out there. Big Dama oiling up his arms. They look good. They look good with the oil, and he's hard to grab.
Does oil clog your pores, though? Are you doing yourself a disservice to your aspiration? Perspiration, rather. You could dehydrate yourself.
Well, we're going to have to keep our eyes on Big Oil. We know Big Oil has been a big part of the game.
I think everything within reason. If someone wants to try to cut corners to better themselves and, you know, Chris, sorry for the random burst of excitement, but you're talking about wasting 2 to 3 minutes per every situation and you're not allowing people to oil themselves.
No, I'm just asking the question. But you just said it yourself, anything within reason. So, you know, time wasting is one of those gray areas, right? That
mm-hmm.
you can't
so it's
really,
oiling.
Yeah. Okay. It's totally
and also,
fair.
And also totally how fair. Do you, Chris, it's today's day and age in the game where it says say no to racism. How are you going to tell me that oiling isn't something I need to do for my body and skin tone and ethnic profile? You going to tell that to Fernando Torres? You know that?
Fernando Torres is already jacked. He's probably body oiled himself anyways. But, I mean, I'm just asking the question, going to see oil regulated in the league? That's all. Are we going to see it regulated? Because, no pun intended, it's a slippery slope that you know, we may have to monitor.
Mm. Chris hates VAR, but he wants there to be oil regulations. I can't believe it. The game has truly gone. That's how
gone.
I know. It's time to hang up this podcast.
Gone.
It's over.
Well, y'all, it's been a while, but it's time for us to hit the Across the Pond
Swagometer.
All right, y'all,
swag,
welcome
swag,
back.
Swag, 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 swag.
This is the Across the Pond Swagometer, where we're tracking all drip, oil amounts, time-wasting, celebrations, fashion off the field, on the field, manager clothing, referee haircuts. We've got a lot more now, but this is our first Swagometer in weeks, months now. So, Miles, I know you got something for us.
Yeah, my first one immediately. The referee during the Liverpool-Arsenal game.
Stuart Atwell.
There was a lot of style in that game. We had, you know, Aubameyang coming out with his new look. I'm sure he'll get a shout out.
Oh, yeah.
Alisson with his new look and Stuart Atwell with his new look. It looked like he had gone and shaved himself in the dark before he came out there. I've never seen a worse haircut. I've never seen a haircut like that. For a referee,
you know what
or
you
a
did,
worse
right?
haircut in the league.
That's the type of haircut where you put a baseball hat on and you literally take a one and you just take the one across your head up to the baseball cap. That was exactly what he did.
As bad as Richarlison. He must have reffed Everton and been like, I want the Richarlison cut, but I'm doing
what
myself.
I thought about it, Miles, was that you guys would say it was actually very swaggy because the whole time I was thinking this is Cillian Murphy from Peaky Blinders. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's all I could say.
Man's in the wrong city in the wrong era, but yes, I mean, but it's spot on though.
So Miles, you're gonna put that where?
No,
you're gonna put that in the red. That's in the red.
Yeah. That's
well, then
terrible.
Obviously we might as well take it there because it's got to be Aubameyang. I got to be honest.
Oh, I like it.
This is the hair.
Like
this
it.
Is really trying to steal Bobby De Cordova Reed's essence. I mean, he's pioneered that hair in the Premier League this season and played pretty well, unlike Aubameyang.
Jamaica's very own Bobby Reed. I have to support that.
He's taking chances three quarters of the way through the season.
If it makes him feel good, then he should do it. And I think that's part of his style.
Then put that in Forest Green too, then. I mean, yeah, if that's the approach. I got to put our very own, one of the pod favorites this season, Jesse Lingard in the Swagometer. This guy's got to go in there. He's had one hell of a season. You look at him today against Wolves, but also in his last five matches in the Premier League, the guy has a goal or assist in his last five, and he had both today. The way he links up with Mikel Antonio up top, even just simple runs and distribution, the man is making a name for himself right now. I have to put him probably lime green.
Definitely. He's living up to the Lingardinho name. I want to add one more style there that from that game, you know, Alisson also coming out with a new look, mustache, and I think it's terrific. Put this guy in the Forest Green. He's bringing the stash back. As a mustache user myself, occasionally, I think it's a very strong statement. I like it. It's a new look for him, too. And unlike Aubameyang coming out with his new style to try and, like, you know, he's looking for goals. Allison's trying to, you know, get some clean sheets and it works. So
results. I'm behind.
That's true, Miles. You are the new resident hair and facial hair stylist, because what you're sporting right now is Swagometer Belkin look. So I second that opinion.
My final contributions to Swagometer will be two substitutes, Callum Wilson and Trezeguet for Villa, both coming on and scoring two pretty important goals in their season to be the decisive actions to win. How about that? Or the first Callum Wilson goal to take that ball in stride right off the cross. Mm-hmm. That wasn't even my favorite goal of the game, but real, real beautiful.
Damn, no mention of the other two goal sub Jota either. Shay, one last pick.
Okay, I know we talked about it previously, but can we talk about Scott Parker's? He has the dress shirt, sweater, half zip, sweated cardigan look, and I think a man that goes through that much effort to look fly deserves to be in the green.
Even if you let in three goals in the last 12, you deserve green. Yeah, I respect it.
He's trying to make sure that even if his team doesn't look good, he's going to look good. So I put Scott Parker on there.
All right, y'all. We will tweet out our Swagometer picks. Get at us on Twitter, at Across the Pond. Next up, y'all, Prediction League, Across the Pond Prediction League, where we're predicting all 380 matches this season. We're now only like 80 more matches left in the season, roughly, 70 to 80 matches left. So plenty to get through, including a March winner. And some updates, Shay. What do you got for us?
Yeah, I got some updates for you guys. And this is the second to last month we just started, right? So the Premier League ends end of May. So you have a chance to win April and you have a chance to win May. But on that note, we just have a March winner and that we didn't get to announce last time because of the international break. So I'm happy to share that for the month of March, we have two winners, Frank Brown and Good Eats 21. Congratulations to both of you with 20 points. And if you're wondering why it's only 20 points, nope. because we had a short week and not because it was low performance. Big ups to those individuals. You'll be getting an email from us shortly for your diligence in winning the month of March. Now, that being said, it's still April, right? And you've only missed one match week. So for all those who are like, I don't want to be involved, it's too late, there's still a chance to win. And so far in the month of April, so throughout this first match week, we have a high of 7 points across multiple different participants, none of which are ATP members, but that's okay. And if we look at the ATP table overall, if we look at the overall table and who's performing and who's not, right? We have a high of 162 by Hogan Rutherford, followed by 161 by the only Taps and 160 by Michael Hoeksema. So I think those guys have established themselves as being the consistent. But let's look at ATP.
I need a little ego boost, Shay. So hit with it.
Well, you deserve it. You deserve it, Jacob. You have just barely clinched out Jess Malone as the top of the ATP table with 149.
I mean, there's no way Chris will catch you, and so there's no way I can catch the person in first.
That's true. You might be onto something.
Yeah, Chris, it looks like Chris is going to be buying all of you guys hats. Let's just put it that way. It's good because Soji has been needing a revitalization of marketing. So Chris, get ready to buy some hats because you are 11 points behind me at 131, and I have 142. You have 2 months left to make up the distance, and I don't know if it's possible. So
just like how it isn't possible for Mourinho to win a trophy with Spurs and be a success there. Interesting. Plenty of time. Who's our Oracle? Jacob?
Jacob's Oracle. Take it away, Jacob.
Well, I don't want to get too carried away after West Brom's victory this week over Chelsea, 10-man Chelsea. We should throw that out there. But they play Southampton at home this week, and I think they're going to double up and get another result. So I'm going to pick them for the W against Southampton. Southampton had a hard time seeing off Burnley this weekend. And if you look at some of the similarities and types of play and types of team, we know Southampton like to play, and we saw them sort of get punished against Burnley. So that's kind of my logic. And I'm going to say West Brom win at home.
Okay. Well, make sure you make those picks. We got Champions League midweek as well. Get those picks in at acrossthepond.co. Finally, y'all, we've got listener questions on our Twitter at acrossthepond. These came in today. First one from Jeremiah C. on Twitter. Does West Ham have what it takes to finish out the season and get into Europe with Declan Rice out for a bit? We're now close, y'all. Hammers are in fourth.
You know, I don't see it happening. I really like Liverpool's chances after this weekend. I'm looking at their upcoming matches. Still have to play Newcastle, Southampton, West Brom, Burnley, and Palace. If that's not a sweet run-in, you know, I don't know what is. So if they go deep in the Champions League, that could change things. But I'm worried for West Ham.
This one from Rob Neese on Twitter. Will Manchester City have the league title clinched before they play the Carabao Cup final against Spurs on April 25th? This is from a Manchester United supporter, Shay. What do you think? You think they'll clinch by April 25?
I do. I want to say United's still in the running, but let's be honest. Yeah, I do. I just picked them to win Champions League. They're too good.
Yeah, this one from our very own Peter PA on Twitter. Given the form of Jesse Lingard, should United cash in Miles or give him another chance next season?
No, I don't think they should give him another chance at Man United, but I think they should cash in, and I'm sure West Ham would be looking to buy. I mean, he makes perfect sense to sign there.
Another from our very own. We got a lot from our own today. This one from Jess Malone on Twitter. If just Charmin gets a red card and there are no subs left, which ATP field player is taking the gloves for the rest of the match?
I like these questions. I like these questions, and I have a clear answer. I think you're about to say the same thing I'm about to say, Jacob. If you're
No. Let's say it together. I think we have the same answer.
All right, on three. We're going to say it together?
Yeah. 3, 2, 1.
Shay.
Powerbank. Wow. Okay. That is left
he
field.
Said himself.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Okay. Well, let's hear it, Shay. Come on now.
I may not have the cat-like reflexes like Chris, but I have the body structure for good goalie. I got long arms. I mean, when I come out, the best believe the players are going to be intimidated, right? And my distribution is on point, so it's perfect.
All right. Well, look, I think you'd be like Jordan Pickford because you're flat-footed. You'd be caught on your heels the whole time, okay? It's got to be Chris. I mean, I've seen this man strap up the gloves when he had a bum knee in our 7-a-side. And make some incredible diving saves.
Damn. Thank you, man.
With the legs, splits.
I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why it would be Chris. Because we'd be out there blaming the defenders half the time. You're like, bro, what do you expect me to do? I can't do anything if you. I'm a man who takes ownership. When you put me in a situation, I take ownership. I commit fully. If I mess up, it's not anyone else's fault. It's my
personal.
Fault.
This is getting personal. Yeah. Wow. I'm just blaming people. Okay, all right.
Vote for me.
Fair. That's fair.
This is toxic
yeah.
Tuesday.
Yeah, there we go. This one from Eric Italiano on Twitter, our very own. Which team outside the top four should Chelsea and Leicester be sweating the most? Jacob, it sounded like you thought Liverpool could inch in. Any other teams that should be a worry?
We didn't say it, but I thought Everton drawing today was a big loss for them. If they had two games in hand, and if they'd won the two, they'd be up there in top, you know, pushing top four. So I'd keep eyes on Everton. James is back. You know, they could be doing things.
It sounds like collectively we're saying that Tommy Tuchel's team is not a threat, and Liverpool, and neither is Jose's team that you know we shouldn't be worrying about in London.
Yeah, it's hard to not have recency bias right now after the international break, but I kind of want to double down with you, Jacob, and say Liverpool should be that team to worry about. And it's because we know and we've known that this team can play better football. It was just a matter of can they shake off the cobweb. The international break has been a good thing for them, you know, maybe to get some fresh legs in there, maybe for those who didn't travel to really get engaged, to reheal some of these injuries. So I'm kind of with you there. Last one, y'all, this one from me. It's about Christian Pulisic. I know there's obviously a ton of hype around him with the U.S. men's national team, you know, and his transfer to Chelsea and his value as a player. But this is his what injury in 3-4 years? He's been injured so many times, I think close to 8-9 times, a lot of hamstring injuries. How bad is it for Chelsea and the U.S. men's national team for a player this young to be getting injured hamstrings reoccurringly like this?
He's had moments and flashes of being very good, and I think the injuries are keeping him from it. And time after time, we're seeing like these consistent injuries keep good players out. Antonio's one, you know, just picked up an injury today. We all remember Sturridge, and it's like it's a shame when you have a really good player, but they keep getting injured. Hazard's another one. I think at a certain point, you cut your losses and say this player may be brilliant, but he keeps getting injured. Can't, you know, you can't cut it at this level.
So for Chelsea, Chris, because I think this was a two-parter, I'm a little less concerned. I think there's enough replacement value there to, you know, plug the hole that he fills. For the U.S., I'd be a little bit more concerned. And I would hate to see a repeat of the 2014 World Cup where our entire attack was centered around Jozy Altidore. And when Jozy Altidore couldn't go, we had no one to provide a reliable replacement holding the ball up top. We just don't have a like-for-like player there. So I think the U.S. should plan, and their contingency should be to get used to playing without him and find a system in which he is not the focal point. But I do love also that Sturridge comparison. I just wonder if maybe he is kind of a little bit in his own head about the injuries. And that's why he was taking such high precautions after just, you know, sprinting on the field.
But shout out to Bamman, who played for Everton for the first time in 597 days today. So, hey, maybe there's hope. Players coming back from injuries like Bamman and seeing Bolasie score for Burrow. You know, hey, maybe people can get over it. All right, y'all. Well, thanks for tuning in. You can find us at AcrossThePond.co, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and more. Any final thoughts, y'all?
I love this game.
Find us on Twitter at AcrossThePond. Rate, review, subscribe, 5 stars. We'll talk again soon. Champions League midweek. Make sure you catch those games. Miles sipping that Yerba Mate.